I'm going away, I'm going away, and then come back. I'm going away, I'm going away, and then come back. You're an ice cream cone. You're a lollipop. You're a baby chick. You're a pogo stick. You're a magic trick. You're a spinning top. You're special.
Well, yes, indeed. I have gone away and I've come back. As the song says, we've come back and the Neighborhood Archive podcast is here once again. And we've got a few changes that have taken place over the past year and a half since episode 24 was recorded. That's been close to a year and a half ago, and I'm almost ashamed to admit it's been that long, but I'm glad to be back with another podcast here, episode 25 of the Neighborhood Archive podcast. One big thing that's going to be a little different here with this podcast is hopefully the sound is going to be a little bit better on your end. I've changed some things around on my end to where the hollow and low budget sound on my end has hopefully been remedied a little bit, and the sound is coming through a little more clear for you, the listener. One other thing that is a big change here, and I'm really excited about this, is to have a co-host for this podcast. I think it's been something that was lacking on previous episodes, to have a second voice that was a regular voice. And so after, you know, well over a year, 2 years, even probably even longer now that I think about it, of corresponding with a regular reader of the Neighborhood Archive, I've enlisted Mr. Aaron Schulke to join me as co-host of the Neighborhood Archive podcast. And so, Aaron, I'm very glad to have you on board for this, and I'm looking forward to what you've got to contribute.
I'm happy to be here with you, Tim. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something it's pretty exciting for me because the podcast, I think, is something that could have been something a lot better than what I was making it early on. And I think I ended about the last 10 that I recorded by saying something along the lines of, I'm hoping to do this more regularly. And then I would go, you know, I would go another 6 months and not record anything. And so if nothing else, I think having somebody else on board might give me a little bit more accountability to actually stay with this and do this a little more often than what I was doing, because I think there's a lot of great topics that we could discuss that are out there. I've considered the idea of maybe even taking a weekly topic of those episodes, you know, that were broken down, five episodes on a topic after 1979, and talking about a week of those at a time. Or there's so many possibilities out there, and I'm hopeful that having a second voice on here will help speed that along and help that.
You know, maybe we should start with the week on discipline then, so that way we continue you know, with our own disciplines to, you know, to do this a little more regularly.
Point well taken. Point well taken. So, you know, and other things with the site, while I'm talking about changes with the site, before we get going with this episode full steam, I will say that there's been some changes to the setup of the Neighborhood Archive site itself. I feel like I need to take about 30 seconds and explain the purpose behind those changes. I know there was a handful of people that were somewhat disappointed with the visual changes of the site, a little less colorful, a little less flashy, I guess you could say. And I guess I could explain that away by saying when I first started this, you know, however many years ago, 5 years ago maybe, my idea was that this site would become somewhat of a Wikipedia of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And in my mind, visually, I had a vision of the site looking somewhat like the Wikipedia style. And that was somewhat of the purpose of the change at hand. The big thing I think that this does for me, and this doesn't affect you, the reader, and you, the listener, but the big thing on my end is just it gives me more space to work with on a screen basis. And so, I just felt like I needed to throw that out there because I know there were some people that were disappointed, with some of the color being taken away from the sides and things like that. I just felt like the site was getting a little too, cluttered and cartoony, I guess you could say, which I guess it's kind of funny to say that about a kid's show that's, you know, supposed to be somewhat cartoony at times. But I guess that's my short explanation for why the changes are on there and why it's looking a little bit different. The main page itself is far from done. I'm still considering some ideas for making that main page a little bit different, but we'll cross that bridge in the future. But back to the podcast for now. Let's talk, Aaron. Aaron and I were trying to come up with a topic for this first episode as we come back with after a year and a half hiatus here from the podcast, and something that was fresh on our minds that we both felt was was pretty significant in this, the neighborhood circuit, so to speak, recently, was the book by Michael Long called Peaceful Neighbor that recently mm-hmm. hit shelves. I think it's been out about a month now. Aaron and I have both read the book and have some thoughts on those that we thought we would discuss tonight. Probably won't keep you too long, hopefully to keep this under about 25 or 30 minutes. So if you're interested in this book, I know there's been some questions. I've gotten some emails here and there. There's been some questions on the message board on the website, on Facebook, on what my thoughts are on the book, what we think of it. And I've been kind of holding off to share those opinions until I read through it a second time, which I did this week. And quite honestly, Aaron, I don't want to speak for you, but I was actually just kind of blown away by this book.
I love this book. I really do. It's there hasn't been, what would you say, maybe four or five, you know, books about the neighborhood, would you say? Maybe even less.
Mm. You know, written for adults, there's not been many, no.
Well, right, exactly. There was the one I was thinking of, I believe it's called Children, Television, and Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. That was a pretty good one. This one is by and far, I like this book a lot. It delves into the more of the emotional aspects of why Fred did what he did, how Fred did what he did. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was trying to explain this to my wife the other night. I was talking about this book with her, and I said, you know, there's so many books that are out there that any of the books that have been written about Fred, it seems like deal more with him biographically. It talks about his background, right. Talks about his family, talks about why, you know, he got into television, and so on and so on, to where it's things that I'm not trying to talk down about those books. I think they're all fine and good in their own ways, but it's not much more than you couldn't read on a Wikipedia page. You know,
exactly. A lot of the books are things that we, you know, everybody, you know, pretty much knew, you mm-hmm. know, already, if you were, you know, involved with knowing more about the man's life to begin with. This just goes into that that next dimension, the more philosophical, you know, intricacies of his brain, and why he did the way he did things the way he did, and again, hard to explain, but that's kind of my thoughts on it. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's all these stories that go around, and I've probably talked about them on here before. I know some are mentioned on the site, but you know, there's little details of the neighborhood program that kind of go along as I hate to say with the urban legends and things like mm-hmm. that, but there's stories that are retold that everybody's heard that. Okay, everything was calculated. Everything was so fine-tuned on each episode, and it's always the same examples. It's always the things like, okay, the light flashing yellow as the episode mm-hmm. starts is a sign to slow down. And, you know, there's all these different things that people throw around, but this book is exactly what I think people need to understand just how calculated that show truly was. I mean, there are countless examples in this book from start to finish of things that were done absolutely intentionally as that program was planned, to go along with current events, to go along with current issues, more so than just flashing a light yellow to tell kids that it's time to slow down.
Yeah. And putting a sweater on and changing the shoes. And, you know, that was every program. But you can start with the very first week of nationally televised, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which were filmed in 67 and I believe broadcast in 1968, mm-hmm. on at that time, National Educational Television, NET, which eventually became PBS. But that 1967, 1968, where were we in America? We were right in the thick of the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And what is that first week of episodes talk about? War, you know, mm-hmm. and dealing with things, you know, peacefully if possible, and, you know, that type of thing. So, that's the first week of national programs right there. Mm-hmm. That kind of sets the tone, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And that's just one of many examples in this book that mm-hmm. that just, you know, bring to light just I don't mean to use the term, you know, cliche, but it brings to light the genius of Fred Rogers, that the, you know, you mentioned the correlation between the episodes, you know, the first week of episodes and the Vietnam War. You know, there's other examples in there, including things like, you know, at that time also, you know, we're dealing with racial segregation and you know, the police, you know, on an opposite spectrum from Black America. And so how does Fred respond to that, but to bring in Francois Clemens, and what role does he give him on the program, but to make him a police officer?
Exactly.
You know, which is just so counterculture, not to use, you know, the term from the title of the book, but it is so countercultural. And there's so many examples throughout this book that I absolutely was just blown away by it.
Well, and you know, females in, you know, leading roles and characters and that type of thing in the program, you know, that's obviously part of it. You know, Francois, you know, brilliant example right there. Just all sorts of things. And if you needed more reasons to love the guy, these are some of those reasons, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to my conversation with my wife, I tried to explain to her, I said, this book explains the reason why I think I'm so fascinated with this program. It's not because of the creativity of the puppets, and it's not the lyrics to his songs. Those are all fine and good. And those, I have my own respect for, you know, every level of the program in that sense. But to me, this book just completely encapsulates why I'm so fascinated with the career of Fred Rogers, is because of these types of things that were so well thought out, that were so, he didn't tackle these social issues and these current events of the time head on. He didn't go out, and as he says in the book, he didn't go out with signs and protest vocally in public. He did things subtly that were somewhat behind the scenes through his program. He made his points clear.
Absolutely, he didn't need a lot of fanfare. Mm-hmm. He did it in his own way. And the thing that I noticed too, and I kind of knew this before, but reading the book kind of, you know, underlined it a little bit for me is he almost got deeper, you know, as he got older, as most people do sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. I guess. But the program itself even got a little more involved and a little more simpler, almost simpler, but well, deep and simple, right?
Yeah.
using that phrase,
right.
As the show went on, and this book kind of talks about that. I mean, this book, Michael Long must have spent an awful amount of time at the Fred Rogers Center in outside of Latrobe, Pennsylvania, because he has dug through speeches and mm-hmm. sermons that Reverend Fred Rogers has given at the Presbyterian Church and you know, correspondence and emails and all sorts of things. It's a very well written book and very well researched, in my mm-hmm. opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah,
couldn't agree more. You know, there's details in there too that, you know, that were somewhat surprising to me that you don't see in most of the books that are written about Fred. You know, there's things that, you know, a lot of the books and the documentaries and the biographies that are out there talk about how he came from money, mm-hmm. how he came from a wealthy background. But I've never read one before that goes into much detail about that. It always talks about, you know, his father and his grandfather and, you know, how he grew up in a wealthy family and so on and so on. But it never goes into much detail. And I think Michael Long does a great job of not going into a lot of detail about it himself, but enough to where it's very clear that Fred wasn't just, he didn't come from just a wealthy family. He came from a family that had chauffeurs, that had, you know, people caring for their house and their lawns and cooking their meals and things like that. This wasn't just somebody who had a good amount of money, which I think that's interesting because I don't think a lot of people understand the background that Fred came from. Not that that makes him any less reputable or any less respectable, but I think that's interesting because I don't think a lot of people go into that detail when they write biographies of Fred.
No, but I think what it does underscore and highlight is how down to earth of a person he was his entire life.
Yes, yes, I completely agree.
I know a lot of people that have tremendous amounts of wealth and they're not very down to earth.
Yes,
yes. So, I mean, that's just that was one of the things that I take away from that mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, and he even mentions in the book, and again, I don't want to go into too much detail about the book because, of course, I want people to read the book. But,
correct.
You know, he even goes into some detail talking about how when Fred was filmed in his own home, he made a point to ask the people filming to not use camera angles that would show the things in the home that showed, you know, amounts of wealth or anything like that. And he goes on later to describe how as he got older, like you mentioned, you know, things got simpler in his life and on the program as he got older. And Mr. Long mentions in the book how as Fred got older, you know, he and his wife downsized from their larger home down to a smaller home and so on. But yeah, no, I thought that was very interesting because it's something that I think is glanced over a lot in biographies because I think it kind of paints a picture of someone who could potentially be, you know, misunderstood as being somewhat pompous and somewhat, you know, arrogant in their wealth, which Fred was not.
one of the things that that you always hear about too when people are interviewed about Fred is the what you see is what you get. He was exactly the way he was on screen as he was off screen, and the book underlines that.
Mm-hmm. No, the whole book from start to finish. There's some things in there that are surprising to me. You know, after all of the stuff I think I've read over the past several years, I was still surprised by some of the things I read. But at the same time, I wasn't. You know, there's conversation in there between Fred and Francois Clemens about Francois' sexuality, about his his lifestyle, and I was somewhat surprised by the response that Fred gave to Francois. But at the same time, I'm trying to think of how to say this. It wasn't necessarily a negative response. It was
negative and certainly indicative of the times.
Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. It was reflective of the time that they were having this conversation, but at the same time, it was so far ahead of the game in terms of being open to different people's lifestyles.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. No. This I can't applaud Mr. Long enough for this book, just because, as I said, it's so different from any other biography that's out there. And I wouldn't even consider this a biography. I would consider this more just a detailed account of the social issues that were tackled through the neighborhood that proved that this show was so much more than just a show that encouraged kids to make believe and, you know, talk to them about, their emotions. There was so deep of a level of conversation and of interaction on this show that people don't realize that they're watching when they sit down for, 20, 25 minutes with the neighborhood.
Well, and the other thing too that I kind of realized as I was, going through the book myself is that, as you know, Tim, and listeners might not know this, but there's some that will. There were more episodes filmed every year in the beginning than there were later, and at the same time, the later episodes were a little more emotionally involved, in my opinion. I thought they were a little more calculated, a little more planned. They had the weekly themes, the divorce and the competition and, things like that. What I'm trying to say is that I can understand why there were only so many for that year, because it took so long probably to put all of that together and to Dr. McFarland, consultant, to look over it and that type of thing. And it just those types of things that it doesn't say that in the book's text, but got my brain going a little bit,
You know, as I'm reading through the entire book, I couldn't help but go back to a conversation actually I had on one of these podcasts with Elliot Daly. So, it's been several months ago. But one thing, when I go back to that conversation I had with him about his time working with, it would have been Small World at the time, but, what became Family Communications. The one thing that stands out from that conversation that I will never forget was when Mr. Daly said to me, he said something along the lines of Fred was one of the most powerful people he had ever met. And that just really stuck with me, because he said that. And if I remember right, there was a bit of a silence as I kind of absorbed that. And he went on to explain that it wasn't powerful in the sense that most people think of powerful. It was powerful from a presence and from an emotional standpoint, to where he said Fred could walk into a room and just have that entire room encapsulated, just with his presence alone. And I think this book is a perfect example of just the power that he held with his television show, with his writing, with his songs, because it goes, like I said a minute ago, it goes so much deeper than just catchy lyrics that kids will, that kids will remember and sing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the book too, it does. We've been talking about some of the early things, from the late 60s. It goes well into hunger in the 80s and the nuclear arms race and all of that. I guess bottom line is it's recommended from me.
Oh, absolutely.
we both are going on about it, but we really, at least I don't want to mean to speak for you, Tim, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I think you and I were talking before we started recording tonight that I can understand where, there was some negative opinion about the book that was expressed online on the Facebook page, and I can see where people are coming from, to where from a political standpoint, this book is written from somewhat of a liberal standpoint, and people with more of a conservative view on the world and on politics and things like that. I can see where some of this could come across as, you know, being, I guess, quote unquote, written with an agenda. But I don't think it was. Reading it from a just an open-minded standpoint, not necessarily from a left or a right standpoint, I truly think this is just a fantastic book. So,
well, you know, even if it is written from that type of a slant, the book is researched well enough that there are these excerpts and things, and you can make your own decision of which way it's going or which way Fred meant, because I mean there's some whole paragraphs of sermons and emails and things in there, and you know, so like I said, even if it was written that way, which I don't think it really was, you know, there's enough there to form your own opinion.
Yeah. Well, I think we could go on and on about this book all night, but I think the point is clear that if you've not read this book, I think it comes highly recommended from both of us. You know, it's something you can grab off of Amazon. I want to say it runs around $10. $10 well spent, in my opinion. I think it's well worth the money for anybody who's, you know, familiar with the program, or honestly for anybody who's interested in social justice, social issues. I think it's a very interesting read from either side of that. So. You know, Aaron, I think something that we could talk about, you know, with this being kind of a rebound for the podcast, and with you being on board for this, is let's talk a little bit about, hopefully I'm not catching you off guard with this, but let's talk a little bit about your personal interest in the neighborhood. You know, I think that's something that people are aware of my background and my interest in the neighborhood, as I've talked about on here before, and I've talked about through the site itself, but. With you being kind of the, you know, I guess the new kid on the block here with the podcast, let's talk a little bit about that. I'm curious to hear your take on what your interest is in Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Oh, sure, no problem. Well, it's different now than what it was when I was younger, that's for sure. I watched it. I was born in 1981. I'm 34 years old now, so I watched it really during its heyday. That's when the ratings were very, very high for the program, was around that 1983, 84, 85 area. And that's when I watched it. I just watched it as a normal, you know, that's up for debate, but 2-, 3-, 4-year-old boy. And then, you know, we're typically, that's kind of where the end of the target age group is for that particular program. And Fred himself has even said that, like, the 2- to 6-year-old was kind of the target. Mm-hmm. You know, I ended up watching it over summer vacation still after that. Now eventually, you know, Tim knows this too, but I eventually got into a career of broadcasting, and I think, Because Fred showed some of the things behind the scenes, and now I did radio instead of television, but it was just that seeing the behind the scenes aspects of the television program and things like that are what really got me involved or interested at that time. I wasn't involved at that time, but interested in broadcasting. Really, I didn't know it yet, but those seeds were planted around that time. So, but I formed a real deep personal connection to that program. You know, I was not an only child. However, I was a young child of 3. There were 11 years between my nearest sibling and I. So I was kind of an only child growing up. So, you know, kind of the neighborhood of Make-Believe were kind of my friends there and that type of thing. So I really enjoyed that program. Later in life, you go through some rough times, sometimes, you know, I didn't go through terrible times, but, you know, you go through some emotional roller coasters at some point, and you tend to go back to your childhood, or at least I did, kind of think of things that comfort you. You know, I always think of the song that Fred wrote called Please Don't Think It's Funny. You know, when you want an extra mm-hmm. kiss, or, you know, when you want an older toy from years ago, you kind of go back to your childhood for those comforting type thoughts. And so, around when I was 20, 21, 22, somewhere around there, I kind of got involved again with the program, just kind of watched it a little bit to be comforted. And then in 2009, I had my own son. And so now it's even different for me now, where we watch it now. He's 6. We watched it, you know, when he was about 3 years old, 4 or 5. He still enjoys it now that he's 6. And so we're watching them again. I'm enjoying them again. And also, but it's different mentally for me, because there are certain things that I'm learning from that program again as a father. Mm. So those are kind of the reasons why I really have respected this man for such a long time. And really, the older I get, the more I do.
What are some of those things that stand out now that you're an adult? You know, I know we've talked about that, you know, I think briefly through emails and things like that in the past, but what are some of the things that stand out to you as an adult about the program that, you know, maybe a 5 or 6 year old wouldn't pick up on?
Well, you know, patience, mm-hmm. really, that's for me. You know, that's for the parents, you know, patience and, you know, discipline and things like that too. But as far as, you know, what my son gets out of that is he slows down. You know, it's a slow paced program. He slows down and he'll sit and watch it. And when other programs are on that may have a more of a hurried pace, he tends to not pay attention as much. So those are kind of the things that I've noticed for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely something I noticed with my own kids where, you know, even with Daniel Tiger, I feel like is a faster paced show, but yeah. At the same time, I feel like they pay closer attention to that than they do some of the other programs that are out there. And it's just, it's comforting to me to see my own kids, you know, taking part and taking something away from that same message that I feel like I took away as a kid. And quite honestly, I continue to take away as an adult. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you know, and I know your interest in the neighborhood goes far beyond just watching, you know, watching television and, you know, watching the programs and listening to the music, and sharing that with your son. You had shared with me a while back that I think about a year ago at this time that you had made a trip out to Pittsburgh and visited several locations out there that were of interest to the Mr. Rogers fans. So why don't you share a little bit about that, if you would?
Oh, sure. Well, I live in Appleton, Wisconsin, Pittsburgh, about a 10-hour drive from here. We're just south of the Green Bay Packers here in Appleton. So in the first part of May, I took a Saturday afternoon after my day job and drove down and stayed overnight in Ohio. And then the next day I got up. It was a Sunday, so not much to do there, you know, on a Sunday as far as, you know, visiting with anybody involved with Fred Rogers Center or that type of thing. But I did stop at the Pittsburgh Children's Museum that first stop on Sunday. By the way, it was a beautiful day. It was 75 degrees. It was the first 70 degree weather I had experienced that year. It was just gorgeous. Man. And spent some time at the Children's Museum. There were some nice, you know, pictures and there was a set of puppets there. Now, I don't know where they're from. They're not the original puppets. I know that. I could tell by looking at them. Maybe there were just some sort of a replica that were made for the Children's Museum there. But, spent some time there and then, I spent some time in that area of Pittsburgh, which is known as Squirrel Hill. It's actually where Fred lived. Mm-hmm. His big home was there, and then his later apartment was there as well. Squirrel Hill. I wanted to pick that whole neighborhood up and bring it home with me. And it's right around Carnegie Mellon and University of Pittsburgh, and it was right by WQED where the show was filmed. It's just a really nice, you know, old stately homes and you know, mature trees and lawns, and it was just gorgeous. And and then I drove to La Trobe that night, and I stayed there overnight a couple of nights, and I visited with the folks at the Fred Rogers Center, and was able to see the Fred Rogers exhibit there that they have on display, and chat with Emily, the archivist, and Karen Myers, who gave me a nice tour, and you know, they had a couple sandwiches for me, which was nice, some beverages as well, and it was really nice, and that La Trobe area of Pennsylvania is just gorgeous too. And it was very neat. It was very neat, and I'm going back in June.
anything
of this year.
Anything stand out that you you know, really stuck out to you at the Fred Rogers Center that was in the display?
A couple of things. The trolley was very nice to see. That was nice. The original trolley was right there. Well, the only trolley, really. There was one that they used on the CBC program, but after that, it was this trolley. And seeing that in person, Daniel's clock was there. Now, some of the original, actually, the second set of puppets were there. They were redone around 1975. So this, you know, King Friday, Queen Sarah, Prince Tuesday, they're all there. Looking eye to eye with them is a little surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, face to face, eye to eye. I took lots of pictures of that. But just that whole thing, it was just nice. I was the only one there at the time. It was a Monday morning around 9 o'clock, and it was just peaceful and quiet, and I really enjoyed my time there for sure.
Yeah, I was there several years ago, and I just remember seeing a lot of the handwritten things. For some reason, that really struck me as, you know, again, somewhat surreal, kind of like with the, you know, seeing the puppets that you watched as a kid. But it was somewhat surreal for me to see, you know, the handwritten music, you know, that Fred had written out of, you know, with lyrics and, you know, the basically sheet music is what it comes down to.
Right.
For several of his original songs, and knowing that those were the original, you know, some of the original copies of those songs, it just was. Yeah, it was kind of like looking at, you know, the original copy of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or something along those lines.
Yeah, and you know, who knows, maybe the only copy of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, for example, I believe I'd have to look at my phone, at my photos, but I believe there was an original manuscript there for Won't You Be My Neighbor. And I think, if I remember correctly, the note said something that says, use on July 9th, 1963 program, which would have been, you know, the Mr. Rogers program from CBC.
Right.
So that goes way back.
Yeah.
And that was on a little torn half sheet of, you know, legal pad with, mm-hmm. you know, blue ballpoint pen. definitely, primitive, but very neat. Very neat.
It just makes me wonder if, you know, when he was writing those out in the 60s or whenever, did he have any inclination that two guys in their 30s all these years later would be sitting here and oogling over these handwritten notes? I write handwritten notes to myself every day at work, and I'm pretty sure that nobody's going to be looking at those in 30 or 40 years. So
no, maybe he didn't then, but let's hope he does now.
Yeah. So what's the plan when you go back out? Are you kind of going to do the same?
I'm going to do the same
tours
thing.
Or any place in particular that you didn't go before that you'd like to go this time around?
Yeah, I'm actually I've got a new vehicle this year that lets me bring my bike easily to places, a little more easier to places. So I'm going to bring my bicycle along with me. I'm going to spend some more time in that Squirrel Hill area because I love that so much. So I'm going to park the car, get the bike out, and you know, take a tour of Pittsburgh that way on bike, as opposed to trying to, you know, look out the window and watch for pedestrians and all sorts of things that way. It'll be a little easier to do that way. But yeah, there's a couple of I'm just going to basically do the exact same thing again. I'm going to you know, take some more time to, you know, to eat, and I was kind of rushed last time. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna take an extra day this time. It allows me for a little more travel and that type of thing. So really looking forward to it. I really enjoyed my time there, and looking forward to it. And it's not, you know, at first I was a little bit taken aback by how long of a drive it was going to be. I didn't know if I would like that. It's not that bad, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing about it. That's for sure.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that again. Yes,
definitely. Well, so we don't lose too many people. I think this is a good point where we can just kind of wrap up for this episode 25. I think, okay, you know, the book itself that we mentioned, not to beat a dead horse, but I think this book is one that, if you've got the means and you've got the time to read the book, it's a quick read. Peaceful Neighbor by Michael G. Long. Definitely something to look into on Amazon. As
first
for the
time, you did it all in one spot, didn't you? One sitting.
I did. I read it cover to cover in one day, and then I went back about a week later and read through it a second time, just quite honestly, just to kind of put some thoughts together that I was going to share on the site, and then we tossed around the idea of talking about it on here, and I thought
it shows you how good it was. You did the whole thing in the first
yeah, sitting. Yeah. Definitely. I kind of have a biased interest in the book, I guess you could say, but
yeah.
But no, it definitely is worth the read, so. But as far as the podcast goes, I couldn't be more thrilled to be back and doing this again. I really, this is something that I think could have been a lot better than what it was the first time around when we did, a couple dozen episodes, I guess. There's just so many stories to be told, so many stories to be heard, not just from you and I, but there's so many people to talk with, whether they were involved with the show, whether they were influenced by the show. It's just so many stories that are out there that I look forward to hopefully digging into this. I won't end this podcast like I did so many others and saying, I really hope to be doing this more often and then, wait another 6 months. I can assure you this is something that now we've got Aaron on board here. I look forward to doing this much more often. Any final thoughts, Aaron?
No, I appreciate you thinking about me to hop on here with you and for these. And, I had a good time. I look forward to doing it again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I can't wait to have you back. This is something that I hope we can do often. So for the listeners, I hope you'll continue to check in here with us on the Neighborhood Archive podcast now that we're back on a more regular schedule. And, of course, always back with the Neighborhood Archive site itself at neighborhoodarchive.com. Feel free to join in on any of the other social media sites. We've got Facebook. We've got Twitter. There's the forum itself, the message board link through the site. So many conversations to be had. Feel free to chip in wherever you'd like or just kind of snoop around. There's always things to talk about and things to read about. So look forward to hearing from everybody soon.